Thanks for downloading the Threads Church podcast. For more information, visit threadschurch.org.
Yeah, so my name is Alice, and I am part of the Loaves and Fishes missional community here at Threads. If you've been following along with this Lent season, we've been talking about our shared practices, what they are, and why we have them, and finding practical ways that we can live them out. So today brings us to presence, engaging in God's presence. We believe that he is here with us and calling us to interact with him. It's appropriate that I hear birds outside right now, because in the middle of like this chaotic mode that the whole world is in, I remember Friday, I had been feeling really calm and peaceful about this whole coronavirus thing, but then I had this moment Friday where a little bit of panic started to seep in, if I'm being honest. And I stepped out of our house, and we have these bushes by our front door, and I hadn't been hearing many birds yet this pre-spring season, but I heard these birds singing, and it just occurred to me that it felt like in that moment that the birds remembered something that I had forgotten, that the world is still moving and breathing, and that we still have songs to sing, and that we can still be engaging with each other and in God's presence. So God's presence, it doesn't parallel to the news. We're not ignoring the news and what's going on by having this conversation. It's still our headline. It's still our great news, right? So in not even outside of this coronavirus, just typical life is really noisy, right? There's so much distraction that's constantly begging for our attention, right? We have kids, we have work, we have families, we have household responsibilities. And even in the middle of that, I have to confess that when I'm at work, I always have a video up. I love having video sounds. I love having music playing. Are we okay? Okay, and even when I'm in my car, the first thing that I do, sometimes even before I start the car up, I always have to cue up the right music for the mood. It's just a constant stream of noise. And we just finished this Screwtape letter series. And I think that one thing that we can find from that is that the devil loves to take these daily noises, these sometimes mundane distractions, and use them to defer us away from recognizing God's magnificent work around us. So I don't really get that much into like celebrity gossip and what the newest thing is among our stars, but I've met a few of my favorite musicians. I've met one of my favorite athletes, and I have, in that moment, engaged so much energy into what I would say to these people that I look up to. And there's a song that came to mind by the Small Town Poets. It's called Prophet, Priest, and King. And in the song, he's describing like having these casual interactions with these people of high authority. He's talking about just writing letters to the Queen of England and the President, like they're just brothers and sisters, like not looking down on them, but just seeing them as peers. But then he describes making himself an altar to an old friend of his, meaning God, and that when he's in this space with God, he uses the words that he gushes like a groom, that he's just so overwhelmed by the glory of his presence and being humbled by his presence. God's presence is active all the time. It feels casual almost because it's just always there, right? But it's important to remember just how profound it is and take advantage of it, and that's what we're going to talk about today. That the idea of this, the God, the creator of the universe, who crafted all scientific laws, he established humanity, he shaped the earth, that same God longs to be with us. He longs to hear from us. And if we really believe that, then why do we find ourselves so easily distracted by literally anything else? I think that's an important question to ask, and not for the sake of invoking any kind of shame or guilt, but to inspire some change there. Our presence with God, it's got to be the ground zero of our foundation of Christ in the kingdom. Kevin talked last week about the importance of being in the Word regularly. So I want to reiterate that. Hard to not be distracted by this. Okay. So we need to be in the Word regularly, and also in prayer. We have like all these commentaries and sermons that are great, spiritual talks, not sermons, and other books that they're great to be engaging in, and that's a good thing, but it can't take the place of that direct connection with God. We all have that responsibility to have a direct connection with God. We can't grow with God vicariously. I've found that even though prayer is so critical, it's so important, that if I'm suggesting it to a friend who is struggling, then I feel the need to kind of set it up with an apology. Like, I'm sure you thought about praying about this. I'm sure that you've already been praying. But the reality of it is that we all kind of need those reminders to be in prayer regularly. Sometimes it's the obvious answer, the most basic response that gets overlooked, right? Like, with the coronavirus now, what's the number one thing that people are saying is wash your hands. That's something we should be doing all the time, right? Especially important now, but it's just that basic answer that we need to sometimes just be redirected back to. What about drinking more water, right? I get these really intense migraines every day when I don't drink enough water. And I know that it's going to happen, but I still have those days where I just don't drink enough water. And of course, I fall into that. The Bible describes God's presence as water. In the Gospel of John, it says, if anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. The first letter to the Corinthians describes being baptized by the Spirit. Jesus even calls himself the living water voice. Okay, so don't get lost in that. We'll come back to that. So my husband and I, we've been married for 7 years now, and still feel pretty new to the whole marriage world, especially compared to people who have been married much longer. But we've been married long enough that we run the risk of falling into this sort of comfortable relationship where we're not really prioritizing time together. We're not prioritizing maintaining a healthy relationship. We just kind of fall into that status quo. And so what we've started doing for a while now is every Wednesday night we call it marriage time. And there's no question about it. We don't have to ask, are we going to do this tonight? It's just every Wednesday night, that's what we plan on. And it's never anything profound. Sometimes it's just playing Mario Kart together and talking together or sharing music with each other. But it's engaging in that friendship, that time together, that sharing something with each other. And again, with that, if you're married, you can relate to that. But it's also relatable if you're in any kind of long-term relationship that you're invested in. It takes that time, that intentional time together, to maintain a healthy, deep-rooted relationship. There are a lot of times in Jesus' story through the Gospels where it describes him retreating to prayer. And it's always a pretty short mention, maybe just a sentence or two, but I think it's really profound. I'm going to read a few passages in Luke where it references this. Luke 4:42, at daybreak, Jesus went out to a solitary place. 5:16 in Luke says, but Jesus often withdrew to lonely places to pray. Luke 6:12, one of those days, Jesus went to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. In Luke 9:8, it happened while he was praying alone. So again, short little tidbits, but easy to overlook, but don't overlook that. Even Jesus, who had perfection, still found the need to retreat and to pray with God. It's not something that we do when we feel like we're losing it, or something that we do because we're sinful. It's something that we do because we want to have that relationship with God. And so in any relationship, it's important to be talking, right? But then we also need to allow some room for silence, especially if we want to be hearing from God. It's one of the curses of a modern culture is that it's really uncomfortable to sit still. It's really uncomfortable to be in silence. And I think that one of our hesitations in engaging in silence is that it takes the control of the conversation out of our hands and it leaves it to God. And part of our fear may be what God has to say. I think that that's something that I've found in myself a lot, that it's easier for me to vent to God than to allow space for what he's going to say, because a lot of times I already kind of know what he's going to say, and I don't always want to hear it. Part of our hesitation may be some unbelief, and I think that's okay to admit. We might have those moments where it's hard to believe that he's really a living God, or even aside from that, if he's a living God, that he really wants to hear from us. I think that's okay to admit. I think that's good to admit. But remember that he is not a figment of our imagination. God is alive, he's active, and the Spirit is speaking. I did mention a little bit sooner that sometimes prayer and Bible study and this time of silence, we are hoping to hear from God and we don't hear from God. And I think that that might be part of our hesitation too. What does that mean for us? Right, we have, as a church, have been in that position recently, praying vigorously for life, for a child. It seems like the most basic thing. Like, of course, God would want this for us. But we didn't see our prayers be answered in the way that we wanted. C.S. Lewis wrote a great book on grief after his wife died. It's called The Grief Observed. I'm going to read a quote from that. There are no lights in the windows. It might be an empty house. Was it ever inhabited? It seemed so once. Why is God so present a commander in our time of prosperity and so very absent a help in time of trouble? It's one of the things that I really love about C.S. Lewis. He says what is that reality of where our thoughts go. It doesn't need to make it a happy, feel-good religious statement. We can admit that there are times when we feel like God isn't there. We've all been in those dark places. And if you haven't been, then you probably will be at some point in your life. So when you're in that place, I have three pieces of advice. One, be honest about it. Darkness, it's not contrary to our story in Christ. It's a temporary part of our story in Christ, and that's important to remember. We walk through the valley. We don't live in the valley. But it is still a real part of our relationship with Christ. So one, be honest about it. Two, keep praying. Even if you don't feel like it's going anywhere, it really does help, right? It's how we engage with our lifeline. So keep praying openly and painfully and boldly to God that hears us. And three, hold tight to a godly community. We have lots of MCs and CPRs here at Threads, but even it doesn't have to be somebody in that group, just somebody. Reach out to somebody. Say, hey, can you pray for me? We are together for a reason, right? We're a body that's moving together. We're a community that's moving together. I had a song came to mind. It's one of my favorite songs, even though it's kind of a downer, I guess. It's called Silence by Jars of Clay, and it's a great song. It's sort of hard to listen to, but it's an amazing song. And it just describes this painful moment of wondering where God is and feeling like we just got left in the cold. And there's even a line in it that says, everything that I pray is wrong. Just feeling like we're just totally lost. It's a great song. There are a few songs that came to mind that describe that same feeling. And for me, that's something that's been helpful too. engaging in music. But we remember that God is always with us. He promised never to leave us. And like a good father, especially in times of hardship, is when he draws close to us. There's another song that I was going to play, and I think that I'll put it up on the Facebook group so that we can share it. And maybe that's, like I said, there are multiple songs. Maybe that's something that we could be sharing with each other, songs that are come to mind or that speak to us. This song is called Big Enough. It's by Chris Rice. And I love this song because he describes having those doubts, but then his bottom line is that we're not big enough for those questions, but God is big enough for those questions. And letting that be the peace. The questions, even though they don't get answered, they fall on God who is big enough for those questions. I'm going to read a quote by J.D. Greer. Many Christians assume that silence from heaven means something has gone wrong, that the inability to feel God's spirit means God has turned his face away. But this is not what God's word tells us. His apparent silence is, in fact, an important part of how he works in our lives and grows us up into the men and women of faith that he wants us to be. So my mom had this extraordinary gift of wisdom. She just always seemed to be quietly and peacefully in tune with God's truth. It was amazing. And to the extent where it's a family joke that if you ever didn't know what to say or how to handle a situation, just go ask mom, because she'll tell you word for word what you should say, and it was always brilliant. And I remember soon after my dad had passed away, having that conversation with her about this. We had been praying for his health, but we didn't see it. And I remember that she just quietly said that we had prayed for God to heal him, and he did. And I think in that moment, it struck me as something that was comforting, but the more I dwelled on it, the more I started to think of God, maybe subconsciously, as almost like a rabbit or like a troll under the bridge that was just waiting for you to word things in the wrong way and then say, like, oh, you know, be careful what you wish for type of thing. Fast forward to after my son was born, and I should note that my mom was battling cancer at the same time as my dad, and she went on hospice when my son was 2 weeks old, so I had a newborn that I was trying to take care of and taking care of her, so I was not sleeping, which didn't help to my mental process at all. But my husband and I, we would pray over our son every night as we put him down. And one of the things we would pray for, because we needed sleep, was that he would sleep well. And this isn't something that I even confessed to my husband until I was preparing this talk, that in my head, after that, I would always clarify to God, like, this is specifically what I mean. Like, I want his lungs to keep filling with air. I want him to be alive in the morning. It's like, don't misunderstand my prayer for sleep. And I think that, you know, in situations like that, even though we understand who God is, and I wouldn't have even said in that moment that I thought that God was any kind of cruel God or that he was looking for me to provoke something that I didn't really want. But our emotions take over, and that's a human thing. Emotions are okay to acknowledge. They're real. I do think that we have some hesitation when gazing in presence with God, because if we acknowledge that God knows best and he's going to do what's best, then why even bother pleading a case to him if he's going to do what he wants in any way? In the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 7:7, Jesus said, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks, the door will be open." Which there's something to that. It's suggesting that prayer, there's something exclusive about prayer, right? If we're asking, seek and you will find, ask and it will be given to you, then the counterpart of that is if we don't ask, then we're probably missing out on something, right? But the other side of that is sort of this image of Jesus being a blank check. And I've had friends who present this really in-your-face, bold faith. And I think that it's good. It's not a shallow thing necessarily, but it kind of comes with this assumption that God is going to answer their prayers, that rough paths are going to be made smooth for them because of their faith. And then when things don't work out the way that they were wanting it to, then their faith crumbles, or it's really, really pushed in a way that it shouldn't be. So continuing with the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus uses this language that's pretty consistent throughout the Bible, this language of God being our Father. It says, "Which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask?" So he knows what we need. He knows what's best for us. Like a good father, he does exercise some judgment. And it's hard for us to see because we don't see the whole picture yet, how his judgment is always best. But we can be assured that he is not a cruel God. He does allow, like a good father, these opportunities for us to succeed, fall, and grow and strengthen. So the last time that Jesus retreated in prayer with his father was in the garden. It was the night before he was to be crucified. And this is a hard passage to read, a hard story to read. Jesus knows what's coming. He knows the suffering that's coming, and he begs for God to take this cup from him. But he concludes it with this: "Yet not as I will, but as you will." He's presenting his case to God. And remember that this is the same Jesus who just before had been telling his followers, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open." So he's not going back on that. He's living it out. He's following it out. And I wonder if he knew that God wasn't going to answer that prayer, but he still presented his desires to God. And we know what happened, right? It's hopefully not a spoiler alert. Jesus died. He died. And he not only did he die, it seems like the least traumatic part of his crucifixion, he suffered greatly and died. And then we know, of course, what happened again. Hopefully not a spoiler alert. Jesus rose back to life. He saw his story through to completion. He had this gift at that time of seeing the whole picture. He saw how God was glorified through God's actions. And I do believe that one day we will be able to see that for ourselves, see our story through to completion and see God's glory in it. So this is something that we will hopefully talk about, because we don't know what the next few weeks are going to be. But in continuing with talking about practices. Yeah, geez. One of them is extended community. So Jesus, when he retreated, he didn't stay in those hiding places, right? He re-entered back into the crowds. He was being filled with God and then spreading his truth, God's truth, out to his people. And so just a reminder that that's what we're supposed to be doing. When we get filled with God's truth in his presence, we carry it out. We teach, we share, and we serve others. And especially now, during this lockdown, it seems like, okay, community kind of takes a back seat. But really, that now is the most important time for community. It's going to look different, but it's really important, especially now, for us to be finding ways to take what we get from God's presence, that peace, that comfort, and be spreading it out to our communities. So there's this section in John 10, 27 through 28. "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. And so I started thinking about that idea that the sheep know the shepherd's voice. And I, again, was going to play this video. I'll put it up on the Facebook because hopefully it speaks to somebody else like it spoke to me. But it was just sort of this mind-blowing thing for me to see. So there's this video on YouTube about that, about sheep knowing their shepherd's voice. There's this herd of sheep and this group of people, and they take turns calling to the sheep with the same exact call that the shepherd uses. And each time the sheep don't even look up. They're just off living their lives, their best lives with the grass. But then as soon as the shepherd calls out the same response, all of the sheep just immediately throw their heads up and they just come running toward him. And it's awesome. And I love that idea of us being in that closeness with God, that we recognize his voice, that as soon as he calls, we get filled with like that joy of like our Father calling to us. And we recognize his voice and we can run to him. So we do all need to be engaging in this Bible study and prayer in silence. It's a universal need for all of us if we're going to be growing in God's presence. But there are different ways that could look in our lives. The logistics could and should differ. We all have different schedules. So a lot of these practices that we're doing throughout these weeks, they feel sort of forced and maybe uncomfortable, but that's how habits start, right? We start in that space where it's forced and uncomfortable, and then it grows into this fluidity throughout our lives. We find ways that it fits best in our lives, so I'd encourage you to keep up with that and being exploring what that looks like for yourself. So I'm going to tell the story, and I honestly don't know if this is profound to anybody else, but if it's profound to one other person, then so be it. So when I was in college, I played in a couple rock bands. I played cello in a couple rock bands, and I was pretty cool. Hard to picture, but I was kind of cool in college. But I had like these two separate worlds. I had these friends that we would play music together. We'd go to live shows together, and that was our thing. And then I had friends that I went to church with and that I could be talking about God with. And when I'm with one, I'm missing aspects of the other one. So last Friday, I went to a concert with some friends, and it was an awesome concert. And I, not just because they have an electric cellist, although 100% biased, it was pretty cool. She let me play it afterward. It was awesome. But I had this moment where we were in this concert, and I almost started crying because I was just so overwhelmed by this idea that God is in this music. It's not a Christian band, quote unquote, but that God was in that beauty. This was my two worlds colliding. We talk a lot, or we have talked before, about different levels of spiritual maturity. And I think that coming to that place, it was the growth of spiritual maturity for myself, being able to see God in that art and the beauty on both sides. And that's what engaging in God's presence does. It allows it to just overtake all of our lives. Again, going back to that spiritual maturity, if this Christ thing for you, if this God thing for you is Sunday morning, then that's a good place to start. But that's not the relationship that Christ died for, right? That's not where he's content to leave it. That's why engaging in God's presence is so important. It takes over our whole lives. So that when we see beauty, we can recognize it as God's beauty. We can give him credit. And it also prepares us for times like this. When the world is going crazy, we still have that presence with us, and we can engage in the world with that peace and that hope that's uncircumstantial. And that idea, I think about this a lot. I have had a lot of conversations with others about the idea of prayer without ceasing. And I used to, when I was a little kid, think that meant just like, okay, you're always in prayer, which, like, how can you get anything done then, right? But it's not prayer, it's not continual prayer, necessarily. It's that we don't have, like, these times of prayer, and then we do life, and then we have prayer, and then we do life. It's God throughout all of our lives. It's talking to him as if he's beside us, which he is. So I want to conclude with this thought, and this has been the most important lesson that God has taught me in my 34 years of life. It's really easy to get wrapped up in these conversations about trying to figure out the logistics of how God works. And I think that those conversations are good to have. I think that they're great to have. God is certainly mysterious to us because he's huge. And wondering about how he works and why he responds the way he does, I think that that honors God's hugeness. But not to the extent where we get overwhelmed with wondering if he's even hearing us or where our prayers are going. Because the reality of our prayers, the reality of our situations and the way we pray to God, that he has never responded in a way that doesn't end in his glory. And whether or not we've seen any tidbits of that yet, a lot of times we haven't seen that, but we will. So I want to repeat that because I want to make sure that this comes across. There's been no outcome to your prayers that hasn't resulted in God's glory. And I'm not saying that the deaths that we've seen when we were praying for health was God's glory. I'm saying that the God is going to be glorified through that, and we will see it. That's our hope. It's not that God is going to grant us what we want. It's that his glory will be sufficient. And so when we engage in prayer, we're accepting his invitation to be a part of his glory.
Thanks for downloading the Threads Church podcast. For more information, visit threadschurch.org.